It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Doors by Golden Bridge.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, and also the blog at ClutchCityCR. So I've got a couple different things I want to hit on today, talk about. Well, I have a response, I guess, first to kind of shore up one of the points that I hit on in the last episode about Andre Drummond as a suggestion for the Houston Rockets. So I just want to quickly nip that in the bud right out of the gate. But before that, I will preface and say that, you know, there's still no news regarding the Rockets head coaching search other than Adrian Wojnarowski coming out and saying that JVG is still the front runner for the position. Steven Silas is a close second, which it sounds like John Lucas has fallen to a distant third for the position. But the fact that we still haven't had a decision made when all these other organizations have made their moves, made their decisions, the Indiana Pacers hiring the former Raptors assistant whose name escapes me at this current moment, the New Orleans Pelicans hiring the brother of Jeff Van Gundy, Stan Van Gundy. So Stan hit the booth for a few months and immediately found another coaching job, which is sort of surprising given how, we'll just say, tumultuous his tenure was with the Detroit Pistons, his last head coaching stop. So a lot of decisions being made around the league, and the Rockets are still without a head coach. And I feel like a broken record saying it at this point. It almost feels like a SpongeBob episode where, you know, as they're doing the passage of time, it's just, you know, like 1 week later and then still nothing. And then it's 2 weeks later, still nothing. And so I'm not coming apart at the seams here, but I'm just getting a little restless because I just want there to be a decision made so that we can at least know the direction the franchise is going in. Because if it's Jeff Van Gundy, obviously they're looking to contend right now within the next couple of years. If it's Silas, maybe it's more of a build towards the future move. And obviously things are going to be more offensively oriented, you know, continuing along the Mike D'Antoni legacy, I guess. And I want to talk about the distinction between those two candidates here coming up in just a minute, as well as talk about John Lucas a little bit. But first things first, I want to nip this in the bud, the situation with Andre Drummond. So last episode, somebody brought up the idea of bringing in Andre Drummond. And first things first is he has the option to become a free agent, but he's not turning down his, what is it, like $28 million extension, his player option. It's been reported by multiple outlets that he plans on picking up the player option in Cleveland. If he was still with the Pistons, he was planning to turn down the player option and look to sign elsewhere, but it seems apparent that he is fully planning to pick up that player option. So not only would the Rockets have to somehow come up with $28 million or whatever it is, the aggregate salary for that, $23.5 million or something to that effect, to be able to trade for Andre Drummond, but he doesn't exactly answer the issues at the five spot that the Rockets have. And that's something that I actually want to tackle in detail in the third segment of this show because, you know, somebody brought up the idea that because the West has LeBron James and Anthony Davis at the top spot pretty much now, and that for the most part, that team, that LA Lakers team, is probably going to be running the West for the next 2 to 3 years at minimum, with LeBron, you know, however long his what prime is he in now? His fourth prime. However long LeBron's fourth prime, you know, goes on for before he hits his fifth prime. And then Anthony Davis, it's smack dab in the middle of his prime right now, entering his prime, in fact. So the West is going to have to go through that LA Lakers team for the next 2 to 3 years. And it makes sense that for the Rockets to be able to ideally contend with the level of dominance from LeBron James and Anthony Davis, they would need not a comparable big to Anthony Davis, but at least a multifaceted big, somebody that can, ideally not, again, doesn't have to go toe-to-toe with Anthony Davis, but a big that is versatile, a big that can complement James Harden a bit and make life a bit difficult for the Lakers, in a potential playoff series, rather than the way that the Rockets are currently comprised, where they're just stacked up with guards. You know, they've got guard depth out the wazoo, but they don't have any legitimate bigs. And I don't think Drummond solves that issue because he is a traditional big. He's, you know, Clint Capella without the verticality, without the athleticism, I guess. And yeah, he's a bit of a better rebounder, not as good of a defender as Clint Capella, and would not solve the issues that this Rockets team has, unfortunately. So as cool as it would be to entertain that idea and, you know, saying, okay, well, he's a free agent, maybe he would come sign here, he's not going to turn down a $28 million contract to come sign with the Rockets for the MLE or something to that effect. And this is similar lines of thinking as far as, you know, other situations, right? You know, thinking that Serge Ibaka would be willing to come to the Rockets for the MLE, or that, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope would come sign with the Rockets for the vet minimum after winning winning a championship with the Lakers. Unfortunately, you have to try and put yourself in the shoes of these players. And at the end of the day, the Rockets are always going to be at a disadvantage because of geography and because they're no longer like contending favorites in the league. So geography, right? There's always going to be the hotspot destinations, New York, the two LA teams, really most of the California teams, I guess. And then the Miami Heat is another good destination. The Texas teams a little bit because of the no state income tax is kind of a big one for certain players from a fiscal standpoint. But legitimately, the destination locations, right? The New Yorks, Boston Celtics, popular franchise, LA, you know, LA Clippers, LA Lakers. The Rockets have to contend with those teams just for players who want to live somewhere nice, who wants to live, you know, or play for a historic franchise. And then not only that, they're also not at the upper tier of teams as far as true blue legitimate championship contenders, because I think you would, you know, comprise that list of mainly, we'll say, I mean, I guess we would still sort of include the Bucks in there, even though they went out sad in the playoffs. But, you know, you've got Giannis there, two-time MVP winner. The Rockets lost out on Marvin Williams this past buyout season to the Milwaukee Bucks. So maybe the Bucks aren't as much of a favorite for that spot, but the Lakers and the Clippers certainly are. And that's where they've got the double-edged sword. Well, it's not a double-edged sword, because it actually favors them. So they're double dipping, I guess we'll say, in the fact that not only are they a primetime geographic location, but they're also two of the best teams in the league. So why would a free agent choose Houston over one of those two teams if they're going to go and play somewhere for the vet minimum and really, you know, potentially, you know, ring chase or just want to play with a great player in, you know, LeBron James or Anthony Davis versus James Harden and Russell Westbrook? I feel like most players are going to lean towards the LA teams if the LA teams want their services. So that's what the Rockets are kind of competing with, unfortunately, in the free agent market. It sucks, but that's just the reality of the situation. So just wanted to address that really quick. I do appreciate Mr. C. Allen 0523 for proposing that, just kind of following up on the Andre Drummond train of thought. So really quickly, we will take our first break. Coming up, I do want to talk about Jeff Van Gundy and Steven Silas and kind of where my feeling on these two candidates sits rather firmly now. I've been a little bit back and forth on which one would make the most sense for the Rockets, but I think I've got, you know, a firm grasp on which one it's kind of, you know, we'll talk about it in a second after a quick message from our friends over at rockauto.com. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, which doesn't really seem fair, does it? Whereas rockauto.com's prices are the exact same for everybody, and they are always reliably low. They always offer the lowest possible prices rather than changing their prices around based on what the market will bear, sort of like what airlines do. You know, RockAuto.com, they have everything. And I mean everything, from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even brand new carpet. So whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, you can get everything that you need, and I mean everything, in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your doorstep. Best of all, like I said, the prices at RockAuto.com, they're always reliably low, and they're the exact same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why, like legitimately, why would you want to spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts when you can visit RockAuto.com and get a better deal? So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And we're back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Hopefully I do a better job in this segment than the last because I completely like waffled about at the end of that last segment. You know, sometimes you just do something and then you're just like, you like re-listen to it or you re-watch it or review it or, you know, you write something and then you look back and you're like, what the hell? So anyways, it's fine. It's all good. We're fine. We're just, you know, we're going live. Anyways, so talking about Jeff Van Gundy and Stephen Silas, right? So where I stand on these two candidates, right, with John Lucas a distant third per Adrian Wojnarowski, at least inferring, you know, the information that he has given, you know, it's safe to say that John Lucas is probably a distant third candidate at this point, if we're to believe what Woj is reporting. Where I stand on these two candidates is I think that Jeff Van Gundy makes the most sense if you're trying to get something out of this next 1 to 2 years of James Harden and and Russell Westbrook. I wanted to say and or, but it's not going to be and or. It's going to be James Harden and Russ, or James Harden and whatever you trade Russ for, if that's something that happens. But JVG is the coach that makes sense to bring in to have a coach who immediately comes in and is able to garner the respect of two veteran players. A coach who's kind of been there, done that, who's coached two previous superstars here in Houston, who has, you know, had the chance to coach Patrick Ewing in New York, who's dealt with superstars before, who's been a prominent member of the NBA community for the better part of 3 or 4 decades now, as a coach and then as an analyst for ESPN, and makes his home is here in Houston, right? He's very fond of the city. You know, never left after being fired from his last stint as the Houston Rockets head coach. He became a transplant, and you know, he loves it here. He claims the Astros, claims the Texans, talks about him on the broadcast. But as a coach, what he brings to the table is he will absolutely revamp the Rockets defense. Now, whether that's with bringing in, you know, modifying the team and trading Eric Gordon and bringing in a legitimate, you know, center, or running it back and playing some modified version of small ball, or they try to find a guy at the margins and bring in, you know, a couple of vet minimum guys to play the five spot, you know, for about 20 to 25 minutes a night, and then PJ Tucker holds down the fort for the rest of the game. Whatever iteration of the Rockets we would see under Jeff Van Gundy, you can bet your ass that they would be at least a top 10 defense. Now let's look at this. If the Rockets are a top 10 defense, and if James Harden and Russell Westbrook by themselves are able to essentially coast offensively and get you a top 5, maybe at worst a top 7 or a top 8 offense, that is a legitimate contender. Being a top 10 in defense and a top 10 in offense is a legitimate title contender year in and year out. There's very few teams that are able to strike that proper balance of offense and defense. And that's unfortunately what we've seen with the Rockets the last handful of years, is they've essentially, under MDA, they had 1 year where they were a top 10 defense. And of course, what year was it? If you said 17-18, you got it right. It was the 17-18 season, right? They were, I believe, if memory serves, the 6th best defense that year. I'm pulling this completely from memory. So please don't quote me if I'm wrong with these words that I'm using with my voice. But anyways, they were a top 10 defense that year. They were also an extremely efficient offense that year, which is why they were such a potent team. So you bring in Jeff Van Gundy, he will absolutely turn the Rockets into a top 10 defense. There's no doubt about it in my mind. Now, does that mean he's able to suddenly get James Harden and Russell Westbrook to buy in completely to some new type of defensive philosophy? No. Does that mean he's able to better utilize the Rockets' wing defenders and role players that are already in place to kind of cover the holes in the defense and just scheme a little bit differently to where the team is able to better mask the defensive inefficiencies at times of one Russell Westbrook and one James Harden when he's not as locked in as he was that we saw of him in the bubble? Absolutely. And that's what we would see, right? That's what we would see is we would see the two superstars who at times, because they shoulder so much of a load offensively, are not going to be, you know, ball stoppers or defensive savants on that end of the basketball court. We would see the other three guys on the court be positioned and conditioned and trained and scheming in a way to mask the issues that are sometimes brought up because of Russ and because of James. And that in and of itself would be able to help the Rockets become a top 10 defense. They weren't that far off. They were a middle of the pack defense this past season. You know, it's not like we're asking a team that was, you know, bottom five or bottom 10 in the league to suddenly jump up to top 10. We're asking a middling team, you know, around the 15 to 17 range to, with a bunch of excellent defenders, right? This team has a lot of plus defenders. So we're asking that team to jump up by about, you know, 5 to 6 spots at minimum to be in the top 10. And I don't think that's a stretch. I really don't. And I think that a JVG-inspired defense would be able to be at least top 5. So you're arguing top 5 defense with at least a top 10 offense. That gets you something done in the playoffs. Absolutely. So I do think that JVG makes the most sense because he would come in and transform the defense and really get something out of this next year or two of James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Whereas Steven Silas, I feel like we would wind up seeing more or less some of the same that we got with Mike D'Antoni. Maybe the offense gets a little bit more creative. Maybe Steven Silas is able to, you know, find a way to scheme against the, you know, the creative flash traps on James Harden and the double teams that he constantly sees. Maybe there's a better way for that 4-on-3 attack with Russ at the helm to be more efficient in their breaking down of opposing defenses. I don't know. Maybe, right? But that doesn't solve the defensive issues. And to me, it's a bigger problem that the Rockets were not able to get stops when they needed them in the playoffs, like consistently, especially down the stretch against the Oklahoma City Thunder. They weren't able to, you know, execute defensively and get stops when they needed to, apart from the really, really crucial James Harden block. I'm going to, you know, the game seven, game winning block, the series sealing block from James Harden, really felt like they weren't able to confidently get stops with their defense. And a lot of people are going to point to the LA Lakers series, and rightfully so, because of the whole James Harden trapping situation and the fact that, you know, especially at the tail end of games, that, you know, at times the Rockets and Harden looked a little flustered, that they weren't able to get points on the board. But specifically, the Rockets led going into Q4 of Game 2, and then they were tied going into Q4 of Game 3. And so it's not like they weren't putting up enough points on the board. But at the same time, they weren't able to stop they had too many breakdowns defensively in those respective fourth quarters of Game 2 and Game 3 for them to give themselves a chance. I think it was it was either Game 2 or Game 3 where the Rockets got outscored but 30 to 20 in the final frame. In fact, I think it was both games that they got outscored by 10 points in the final frame of each of those games. And to me, if you're able to keep things a bit more competitive defensively with the Lakers, then James is still going to find a way to get people open shots, to get people in the right spots. You know, it's a damn shame that Ben McLemore didn't get more burn in that series, especially against the double teams that James Harden was seeing, because you had Eric Gordon, who was shooting a career low from behind the arc, and you had Russell Westbrook, another non-shooter. You had PJ Tucker and Robert Covington, who were being hesitant with the ball. So having a guy out there that would be a lights-out shooter, no hesitancy whatsoever to shoot the ball, would have made things a little bit better. So at the heart of it all, I don't think that the Rockets necessarily need somebody who can come in and suddenly magically fix the issue of the James Harden double teams. That doesn't make sense to me, because guess what? They're still going to see them. people are still going to throw two defenders at James Harden at the half court margin and make other players beat you, because at the end of the day, they would rather get beaten by Ben McLemore and Robert Covington and Austin Rivers than getting beaten by James Harden, because they know that James Harden can beat them. They don't know if the other guys can beat them. They don't know if they have it in them to make those shots, to make the game competitive. And at the end of the day, that's how the league works, right? The role players have to step up and hit their open shots and take their opportunities when given to them. And the Rockets role players didn't do that in this series. They also didn't, Russell Westbrook also didn't rise to the occasion. But I'm giving him a bit more of a pass because of the quad injury, because of the recovering from COVID, all that. He does not get a pass for forgetting how to play basketball, because unlike some other players in the league, when he is apparently injured, it really impacts the rest of his game. Like, this was some of the worst basketball at times through this Rockets postseason that I've ever seen Russell Westbrook play. And so I'm not trying to hold him accountable exclusively for that, but legitimately, I don't think bringing in another offensive mastermind like Steven Silas is suddenly going to remedy that entire situation. Whereas remedying the defense and being able to rely on your defense to consistently get you stops down the stretch, James will get you buckets. James will get you points, or he will get you open looks for your role players if they're doing the right thing, if they're executing out of that 4-on-3 scenario properly. Just by the sheer gravity of pulling a double team, he will get you points. So I think I've hammered home my point there about why I feel so strongly about the fact that JVG should be the next coach and that Steven Silas shouldn't. Now, if Steven Silas wants to dip from Dallas and come be the lead assistant to JVG here in Houston and maybe be saddled up as a kind of a head coach in training behind JVG for when he does want to retire, I'm all for that. I don't see him leaving Dallas to become an assistant coach elsewhere. So to me, if JVG is brought in, you need a lead assistant who can bring you some creativity offensively. I think Kenny Atkinson makes a lot of sense in that regard, because Kenny Atkinson obviously has had some time in the Rockets organization previously, has spent time as a head coach with the Nets. I do still think he was kind of wrongfully fired from that position. Best of luck to the Nets organization and what they've got going on with Steve Nash now, but I don't think Kenny Atkinson deserved what happened to him, and I'd like to see him get a shot elsewhere. And if he comes to Houston, he can be the lead assistant and be creative with the offense and try and, you know, balance out JVG, whose idea of a perfect game would be a score of 1-0. So with that, I think that kind of wraps up my thoughts on the Rockets coaching situation, and as soon as we get the breaking news, you know, we'll have that covered here. And it'll be hilarious if it's Steven Silas, and I'm not going to circle back on anything that I just said. I'm just going to, you know, I do think that Silas, while JVG makes more sense for the here and now, right? The next 1 to 2 years to really make a push at the end of James Harden's prime, I think that Steven Silas makes a bit more sense if the Rockets are tentatively looking at maybe hitting the reset button after this next season. He's a young coach. He's innovative. He's smart. He would run an exciting offense, and if the Rockets really want to hit that reset button, if this next season doesn't go according to plan and they want to jettison James Harden to the team of his choice or to the team that's offering the most lucrative trade package for him to be able to jumpstart a Houston Rockets rebuild, which to me is ideally a young, blooming player who has, you know, very high potential, again, a very, you know, an SGA-type player along with a stash of draft picks, either at least 2 first-round draft picks, ideally 3 first-round draft picks, like unprotected, just straight up, you know, replenish the Rockets draft stock, and then they would be able to tank the next season. And then obviously you would have to also deal Russ for whatever, you know, assets you can get back for him. And then that would be the jumpstart of the Rockets rebuild with a young up-and-coming head coach who's innovative, who could be exciting, who can, you know, try to really farm up the Rockets players that they do have, you know, utilize their G League team, really focus on the development of some of this young talent and jumpstart a Rockets rebuild so that rather than them being stuck in the void for 3 to 5 years, they have some exciting young talent to work with immediately after the James Harden era has concluded. So Silas makes more sense to me in that regard, if that's the direction the franchise is leaning, but I don't think they're leaning that way, genuinely. I think that they want to still compete with James Harden, because when you have a once-in-a-generation type player, a top-5 talent in the NBA in James Harden, a year-in, year-out MVP candidate, you contend for as long as you possibly can until it is absolutely apparent that there is no more hope for a championship title. But as long as the team has James Harden, there is hope for the Rockets to have a puncher's chance at a title. And so that's the direction that I think they're going. And I think that's why Jeff Van Gundy is the lead candidate at this point and my personal favorite for the position. So that was an extremely long segment two. So I want to wrap things up here in segment three with a finishing thought about James Harden and the uniqueness of what faces him in the Western Conference here in just one moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Let's talk protein bars. Do you like protein bars? Have you ever had a protein bar that you actually enjoyed? If you haven't, it's time to check out Built Bar. They've got so many amazing flavors. They've got the originals like salted caramel, my favorite, the double chocolate mousse, banana bread. They've got some new fancy ones, cookies and cream, carrot cake, apple almond crisp, 18 amazing flavors in total. And you can check them out at BuiltBar.com. And I'm telling you, these bars, they're like legitimately, I've had protein bars in the past and it's always been kind of a chore to eat protein bars before, right? But with Built Bar, it's like a treat. It's not eating a protein bar, it's eating a candy bar that is jam-packed with protein, right? Because they're soft, they're covered in 100% chocolate, they're easy to chew, they're not gritty or chalky like other protein bars brands are out on the market. They are low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. You just can't go wrong with them. You know, anywhere from 17 to 19, 20 grams of protein packed in every single bar. And like I said, you can check them out. If you want to try it, if you're ready to actually test out and try a protein bar that is actually enjoyable and, you know, a part of my day that I can even like look forward to, you can check it out. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your very next order. It's 20% off. Just use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. If you've got a spicy take, if you've got something on your heart and mind that you would like discussed on the show, either, you know, if you want your message played back, let me know. If you just want to introduce a topic that you'd like me to talk about, 713-487-5457. Again, that call in line 713-487-5457. I've had a great reception to this call in line so far. A lot of people are using it. I listen to every single message. The messages that are, you know, worthwhile, that sound like they were intended to be played back on the air, I run those back. I'm really excited about that. I think it's a great opportunity for me to be able to interact with you more. It's one of my favorite things, is being able to interact with you, the listener. So this final kind of, you know, I don't want to call it a fleeting thought, because fleeting thought isn't accurate, but I kind of saw it in passing, you know, in the Twitter sphere, and it made a lot of sense, right? Touched on it earlier, but the fact that in the West, every team that wants to contend has to now go through LeBron and AD, right? And James Harden has never had the luxury of having a versatile big man. He had, let's scroll back through the bigs and the history alongside James Harden. He had Omer Asik, the Turkish Hammer, one of the greatest nicknames in all of sports. He had Dwight Howard, who is not, look, for what Dwight Howard was, versatile is not one of those words. He was a defensive-minded center who thought he had a post game and wanted his post touches, even though he was scoring like less than a point per possession on post touches. So, you know, not a polished post game whatsoever, and about 8 years too late, decided to slot into the role that if he had slotted into with the Rockets, he would have been a guaranteed 2010 machine, or maybe even a 2015 machine, basically a supercharged Clint Capella, but didn't want to do that, didn't want to be a rim-running big, wanted his touches in the post, and we saw how that worked out. So he had that. He had him. He did have Donatas Motiejunas for a little while, and that dynamic worked really well because, hey, look at that. Demo was a versatile big. He could space the floor. He had a plethora of post moves. He was a great passer. He was probably the most versatile big that James Harden has had the pleasure of playing with in his career here in Houston. Yeah, I'm going to say big, because if we stretch it out all the way to just front court players in general, then I think Josh Smith might take the cake there, because Josh Smith has incredible court vision and, you know, three-point range, even though he's a streaky three-point shooter. But legitimately, that half season with Josh Smith felt really special. And then there's also Jeff Green most recently. But I also kind of glazed over Clint Capella. But that's a lot of the Rockets, like, front court players, right? They haven't had a versatile big that can actually unlock a version of the pick and roll with James Harden that we've really never seen before, right? If the rolling party of a James Harden pick and roll wasn't a Clint Capella where you know that Clint Capella is rolling to the rim, right? There's nowhere else for him to go. What's Clint going to do? Roll out to the three-point line? No, that's not how that works. He's going to roll hard as hell to the rim, and James is going to either attack the basket himself or lob the ball up for Clint, depending on what the defense does. And James Harden is so elite and so adept at reading the defense and deciding where the players are and exactly how he wants the play to develop, that he's able to read it in fractions of a second and decide, okay, defense is committed to me, lob the pass for Clint. Okay, defense is sticking man-to-man and neither of us have an opening and, you know, the wing defender is closing in, they're sending the double from the outer wing, kick it out for a three. Okay, they're sagging off of me, let me go strong to the bucket and just shoulder pass my defender and lay the ball in. Whatever read James Harden has, it would become just increasingly more deadly if the role man was actually capable of setting a really strong screen and then doing anything else besides just rolling to the rim. So the idea of having a guy, a true blue five who can, one, cause some potential mismatch issues depending on what the opposing five is used to doing, and then two, being able to have that five pop out to the three-point line. I mean, we talk about spacing all the time. If James gets even a half step ahead of his defender, he's pretty much gone to the basket. So you give James a screener who can then pop out to the three-point line. Suddenly, that big, whoever's guarding the Rockets' new, mythical, five-out spacing center, that player cannot commit to picking up James Harden, because if they do, guess what? It's a wide-open three-point shot at the top of the key. Or, potentially, if the wing defender who's guarding the corner has to then come in to help cover James Harden on his drive, that's an open three in the corner. It's just, it's easy offense. It's so painfully easy to see it that way and to imagine what it would look like if James had that versatile big man to play alongside, right? And not even just having somebody who can pop out to the three-point line, but somebody, again, like there isn't another Anthony Davis floating around for cheap, right? I think that's why a lot of Rockets fans, myself included, would love the idea of Christian Wood in a Rockets jersey, because he would give the Rockets that versatile five who could rim run with James Harden, who could be the pick and pop, who could, you know, maybe operate out of the mid-range a little bit, but just as somebody who can, you get in the ball in that 15 to 18 foot range and he can attack the rim himself. He would give you that added threat from the front court, a legitimate front court option, which we saw just how lethal that can be with James Harden having a front court option that can create for themselves, that can space the floor a little bit in, you know, old man Jeff Green. Imagine if the Rockets had a 10 years younger Jeff Green. He and James Harden would be the dynamic duo of the Houston Rockets, even more so than Russell Westbrook, because that skill set paired with James Harden's lethality in the pick and roll is damn near unstoppable. So for me, and for this Rockets organization, and for you, I think this team would be at its best if they had that versatile piece at the five. And I think that they're going to have, like, I can't sit here and be like, oh, well, yeah, it's easy to go get. Hell no, it's not easy to go get. It's going to be hard as hell to find that player or to find that type of production at the five spot, given the financial constraints and given the lack of assets that the Rockets have at this point. Is it impossible? God, no. There are players out there, there is somebody out there who could slot in and fill that position to an extent, right? Are they going to be Anthony Davis 2.0? Absolutely not. Are they going to be somebody like maybe a potential another Jeff Green type, somebody who hasn't had the opportunity to be slotted into that role but can be successful at it? Maybe somebody who struggled with another team, another franchise, and can come to Houston to kind of reinvigorate their career or revitalize their image? Maybe a Ben McLemore type, somebody who comes in and has a system that is almost tailor-made to what their skill sets are when it translates to the game of basketball, and then suddenly they have a resurgent year playing alongside James Harden and being the versatile rim running, you know, popping big that he needs in a pick and roll scenario? Absolutely. It's possible. Now, I don't have an exhaustive list of all the different options of the guys, you know, the kind of at the margin guys that the Rockets could potentially pursue, but that's why, you know, we entice ourselves with the potential trade idea of like a Miles Turner type, right? Somebody who can be that vertical spacing, but can also stretch it all the way out to the three-point line and simultaneously anchor the defense. That would be a dream scenario. Serge Ibaka, another one. Aaron Baines, another more, you know, kind of down the line, more of an MLE, more of a realistic target for the Houston Rockets. But again, a guy who can give them what they need offensively out of the five spot while also helping to anchor the defense a little bit. So I think that that's absolutely crucial, and I don't think that any iteration of this Rockets small ball is going to be able to get through the Lakers because, let's face it, the Lakers can play small ball better than the Rockets because they can slot Anthony Davis at the five and still play five-out spacing offensively and still hold it all down defensively. Anthony Davis would be the ideal, or not even would be, is the ideal small ball five because he can hold his own against guards on the perimeter, he can switch comfortably, he can space the floor, and he can anchor your defense. He is the ideal, the best player to have as a small ball five. And the second best guy, I hate saying it, but it's probably Draymond Green. You know, and this is something that I was going to touch on in PJ Tucker's season recap, but I'll just kind of hint at it here because that'll be our next and final episode for this week for Friday's pod. But, you know, PJ Tucker is, and I know this is going to rub a lot of people the wrong way, PJ Tucker is a poor man's Draymond Green. He really is. He's Draymond Green without the passing. And, you know, he's absolutely got the same level of heart. He's, you know, in my opinion, just as capable of a defender as Draymond Green, just doesn't get the recognition for it at times. Maybe slightly less athletic than Draymond, but they're very, very similar players. It's just Draymond's passing ability, his playmaking ability, is just leaps and bounds better than what PJ Tucker has ever shown in a Rockets jersey. Now, is that because PJ Tucker's not capable of doing that, or is it because of the Rockets system where the ball is constantly in one of James Harden or Russell Westbrook's hands that PJ hasn't ever been given the chance to, you know, quote unquote, run the offense or orchestrate the offense the same way that Draymond does? Would he be as elite as Draymond is as far as the playmaking stuff goes? Probably not. Would he be passable? Would he be adequate at it? I think he probably could be. So I think poor man Draymond Green is a legitimate discussion to be had when discussing PJ Tucker. And I don't mean that as a slight to PJ Tucker at all, because look at it. Draymond Green's an all-star. More than likely, you know, absolutely going to be a future Hall of Famer for anchoring the Warriors defense through three championship titles. So I do not mean that as a slight to PJ Tucker whatsoever. It's just Draymond brings a little bit more to the game offensively than PJ Tucker does. And at times, if the Rockets had some playmaking out of their front court players, it would be a little bit harder to hone in on Russ and on James the way that teams do, because frankly, the Rockets front court players can't play make worth a damn. When Rocco tries to dribble, when PJ tries to dribble, when House tries to dribble, it usually ends pretty poorly. So that's something that the Rockets need to look at to potentially, you know, swap up their offense a little bit. So maybe in that regard, Steven Silas would be kind of a cool pick. Maybe he's able to get a little bit more offensively out of the Rockets role players and take the ball away from James and Russ a little bit and kind of say, hey guys, you know, I know you're capable of doing some stuff out there. Let's see what you got. Something along those lines. But my main point to hammer out that segment specifically is the Rockets are going to need some type of big to be able to contend with the Lakers. And I know that might be a spicy take in Rockets land, you know, especially for anybody who is fully in love with small ball and thinks that that's the way to go for the future of basketball. I think it's great in spurts. And I think that's what we've seen from a lot of teams throughout these past playoffs is that small ball works in spurts, but having a legitimate big to fall back on is important as well. You can't do small ball. It's not sustainable for an entire 48 minutes. And I think the Rockets and their struggles against the Lakers kind of put that on display. So for today's episode, that's going to be where we wrap things up. As always, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.